Today's speaker is Marcia Ratliff. The title of her presentation is Communicating Across Divides. Marcia is the Executive Director of Engage Winona, a local nonprofit that drives equitable community change. Part of their work is facilitating conversations that bring people together across dividing lines and create intentional spaces for relationship building. This presentation will outline tools for compassionate listening, healthy dialogue with folks you disagree with, and more. Marcia is also a poet and the proud mama of a toddler whose name is Maple. She disappeared.
Marcia? Thank you. And thank you all of you for welcoming me into your space today. To talk about something that we might not be in the mood to talk about. So I'll name that right up at the top. The elephant in the room being, you may be still in a place of processing and mourning and not ready to communicate across divides, and that's okay too. And I'm here in my official capacity, but I'm also gonna endeavor to be here as a fellow human with you all and share maybe a little bit more personal information about myself than I typically do in a work presentation, because I think this is a more intimate setting that lends itself well to vulnerability. So I'm gonna lean into that with you all a little bit today. Just to start off, I'm gonna talk a little bit about Engage Winona and a little bit about myself, and then we'll go into kind of the meat of the topic, and then towards the end, it wouldn't be a presentation from me if I didn't give you an opportunity to practice some of the things that I've been talking about. So we'll have a time for that at the end as well. But Engage Winona has been around for about 7 years, eight if you count the year it started as a volunteer project with a bunch of community members. And we kind of focus on three core program areas. One of them is bringing people together to share their stories, spark ideas, and create our future together. We train and support people to get involved in their community. And then we also share stories of people who make our community strong. So those are kind of the high-level things that we work on. And my own journey into this work is kind of a circuitous path. But I moved to Winona about 14 years ago to go to Winona State. I majored in English. And I imagined I would be an English professor and live happily ever after. during college, I got involved with the student newspaper at Winona State, and then I started working for the Winona Daily News. And in that role, I actually met several of the people in this room just reporting on different things that were going on in the community and the ways that community members were getting together, supporting each other, advancing their ideas, and basically creating the community that they wanted to see. So that was really impactful for me. I was 21, 22, didn't know much about the world. And that's kind of your ideal space to be in if you're gonna be a reporter, is just that curiosity and that humility of, I don't really know what's going on. and people were eager to tell me. And so that experience gave me a really good window into Winona as a community, made me really fall in love with this community and imagine that I could have a future here. And I also wanted to get some different experiences and get outside my comfort zone as well. So I went into the Peace Corps and served in South Africa from 2016 to 2018. And while I was there, it was once again an experience of learning that I don't have all the answers. I, in any given space, I'm probably the one who knows the least about a thing. And that experience really taught me a lot about listening and about being present with people. One of the biggest takeaways that I had was in our training, they told us, our day job was English teachers, and then we were also able to do side projects if we felt like the community wanted that and we had capacity to do that. But they told us, no side projects for the first year. You go to work, you do your day job, you go to everything you're invited to. You go to church, you go to the weddings, you go to the funerals, you be in your community. And then in your second year, if you feel like it's time, you can move forward on something fun like a school library. And at the time, that was really difficult for me. I was very much a go-getter, still am, recovering go-getter. And it was really difficult for me to just sit with that for a year and sit in 8-hour church services and go to multi-day weddings and things like that that I didn't understand, you know, deep cultural immersion. But then when it came time for me to try to do something slightly outside the box, like HIV education, I was going to do a condom demonstration with my 7th graders. And there was mixed feelings about this, right? Like, whether it would be okay. And I went to the assistant principal of my school and I said, I need to do this condom demonstration. I think it's really important that the kids have this knowledge before they go into high school. And could you be in the classroom with me? And she was like, yeah, I'm there. When? and so that really kind of drove home to me that if I hadn't shown that I was willing to be there and sit with all the things that I'd sat through, the cultural differences, the day-long school meetings, that is how I earned her trust, and that's how she was ready to support me at that time. So I learned a lot through that process. Then I came back to Winona in 2018 and kind of jumped right in with Engage Winona as a volunteer because I thought that this was the coolest thing that was going on in Winona. Slightly biased. but at the time, I was just volunteering, and then I joined the board. And when the founder stepped down, I applied for this position. But I really learned a lot along the way. And I think when I think about our topic today, I also bring a lot of personal experience to this because I ended up having really different political views than my entire immediate family. And so I navigate this in a personal space quite a bit. And I've learned a lot from doing it wrong. And so I'm going to share a little bit of that with you today as well. So kind of going into the rest of the talk, I'm going to invite us to hold intentional space. We do this at the beginning of all of our Engage Winona conversations, because it's important to not assume cultural norms. We all have different cultures. We all come to spaces from different perspectives. And so we ask people to uphold some shared agreements when we have space together, where we're going to be vulnerable and we're going to share pieces of ourselves. So three for our time today. One would be keeping an open mind and trying to understand different views. Second one would be to share from your experience and welcome that from others. And the third would be to co-own the conversation and learning here today. You get out of it what you put into it. So can you give me a thumbs up if these shared agreements sound pretty good to you for this morning? Okay, I'm seeing a lot of thumbs. Great. They really align pretty well with the Unitarian principles on the back of the bulletin. So why try, right? If we're talking about communicating across the red-blue divide, why try? And this could be something that, again, if you're in a space where you're disappointed, you're leaning into mourning this week, I understand that you might be asking yourself this question. And I think I'm here to offer just a few pieces that have helped me. And one of them is that democracy is a participatory sport. It's not a spectator sport. We are the ones who actively build this by participating. It's an act of faith. It's an act of saying that my voice does matter and that I can make a difference and that we are the ones who make up the government. Second, nobody is one thing, right? We all have complexity and contradictions within our views. And that's something I'm going to get into a little bit later, is how we can lean into that complexity and those contradictions as part of our humanity, being okay with that. I don't know the best approach to geopolitics, and I'm comfortable with saying that, and I have contradictions within that. I want it to be a certain way, but I'm not sure if it quite works that way. So being able to really hold that within yourself, that nobody is one thing. Thirdly, is cultural change precedes structural change. And this one is something that we talk about at Engage Winona in slightly different terms. We would say like narrative change precedes systems change. But really it's about that, again, if we are the government and change happens from the bottom up and from communities, working on community change is a way to work on these bigger structural issues that we have in our community. So cultural change coming first allows people to then be ready for that structural change. And there's a scholar named Eric Liu. I guess he might be a scholar. I don't know what his degree is. But anyway, a speaker named Eric Liu. And he has a nonprofit called Citizen University. and another one called Better Arguments. I'll talk a little bit more about those resources at the end, but one of the things he says is he'll talk to people about, you know, what do you think about what's going on? And people will come back to him and say, oh, they do this or they don't do that. They. And he comes back with that on, there is no they, only various combinations of we. Again, if it's democracy, if we are the government, they are us and we are them. So that's kind of my why try. And then let's look into framework. So again, starting with yourself, if you're going to attempt to communicate across divides, it's okay to wait until you're ready. One of the things that you may have heard of is the HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. So if you're one of those things, it might not be time to get in a conversation with someone that disagrees with you. And actually, I've heard angry or anxious, so that A can be angry or anxious. So then, being honest with yourself, am I angry or anxious right now? Am I lonely? Am I too tired to have this conversation? Then it's time to have it at another time. And as I was thinking about this and imagining what might be a good opportunity, it's maybe after Thanksgiving, you know, as opposed to before the meal. secondly would be to clarify your communication goal. So looking at, if I'm talking to someone that I believe might disagree with me, what is my goal in this conversation? Is my goal to express myself and my personal views? Is my goal to connect with them? Is it to understand them more deeply? Is it for strategy because I want them to eventually change their mind? Is it for relationship building because I want to have a deeper relationship with them, whether they're my friend, my neighbor, my family member? And if you have a sincere desire to connect across political and ideological divides, which goal might be most appropriate from that list? So I'll pause on that one. Any thoughts? Any other ideas for a communication goal? Mm-hmm. It's up here on the side. Oh, sorry, yes. He said empathy, having greater empathy. That could be a goal of communicating. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. If you have a sincere desire to connect across political or ideological divides, which communication goal would be most appropriate? Got one up here.
Yeah, that concept that I really wanted to, you know, it's like not judgmental, I guess. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to understand.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, so understanding being a goal of the communication. Yeah, and in these kind of spaces, it's hard to set aside self-expression, right? We want to be heard. We want them to know what we think. But I think if that is our goal at the outset, we may perpetuate that sense of us versus them, the binary. So if you, again, if you're endeavoring to connect across these dividing lines, I think those goals within the understanding, the relationship building, and the connection, empathy, deep listening space are more appropriate. And self-expression might be a better goal for a space where there's not as much political divide. So language. Language is it's a tool. It can be weaponized. It can also be a thing that connects people and bridges divide. So one thing is understanding what people hear in the words that you use and trying to use language that people use and are familiar with. And then the other side of that is to understand what people mean in the words that they use and ask them what they mean. We're in a time where, because of internet and online culture, terms have really changed a lot in the last 8 years and taken on maybe more charged meaning than they had previously. And so again, words, while we might not notice to ourselves they're very normal to use, they might be themselves assigned to someone that they don't belong and that they are other, they're outside, they don't understand, they're using the wrong language. And in my own journey, I actually experienced this when I grew up evangelical, church kid, taking sermon notes. I think that's why I'm such a good note taker, is because I was doing it since I was like 7. I remember as I began to ask questions within myself that my church didn't have space for, I could feel that people didn't trust me anymore and didn't see that I belonged there. And as I began to hear the language they used, I began to ask myself, who does that make sense to? I began to feel like, I don't know what they're saying. When they say, pour out your spirit on us, what does that really mean? And so the terms themselves then became a different language that I felt like I didn't know how to speak. So this can be something that we need to be aware of when we're talking with someone that disagrees with us or might come from a different side of the political spectrum. And then this quote here. So I'm going to introduce this kind of, it's a really big idea, but I'm going to try and give you just a little piece of it. But this organization called PACE did something called the Civic Language Perceptions Project from 2023 through this year. And what they did is basically take a lot of different terms that people use, such as democracy, American, civic engagement, patriotism. And they asked a bunch of people from across political spectrums, urban, rural, and age differences and racial differences, and asked them, how do you perceive this term? Do you perceive it positively, negatively? Do you think it has an opportunity to connect people or drive people apart? And then, so they analyzed all the terms, and then they made a report with it. And they shared this quote in the report, and I thought it was just so central to that idea of language being a bridge, is that it's our responsibility to slow down, create space, and get curious about the differences and how we understand and relate to civic terms and the values they represent. That is how we steward civic language for the next generation. So this is the result of their report, yes. Thank you, John. I'm not sure why my eyes skipped that. Yes, but yeah, people are eager to elaborate, and it's our responsibility to slow down. That's why I have the slide. So looking at, this is probably a little bit small for you all, but I can share out the deck at the end. Looking at the different terms down the left side of this, we've got community, service, belonging, liberty, freedom, and on down from there. So community actually scored the highest in terms of positivity. It did not have a wide range across demographics, so like a lot of people from a lot of different demographics felt great about it. And it had a really low perception of driving apart. Yay. So we have really a green light to talk about community. And what does community mean to you? And how do you experience community? And then interestingly, when we go down, alas, civic engagement, my bread and butter, is a little bit lower. And I think people don't know what it means, and it feels kind of like academic, and what is civic engagement? So we end up using community a lot more. And then looking lower, democracy, patriotism, diversity, republic, these are ones that people have pretty divergent meanings on and might perceive as driving apart. So what you do with this report is up to you. I'm going to share the full report at the end, and you can read it and check it out. But they talk about, this doesn't mean not to use the terms on the lower end of the spectrum, but to be really intentional about defining those terms and talking with people about what they mean to them. Because then that's how we create shared meaning once again. So, yes. Yeah, sorry, it's kind of blurry. So racial equity and social justice. Top two are community and service. Yes. And again, doesn't mean not to use them, it just means that people have pretty divergent understandings across dividing lines of these words. So it's kind of a measuring stick, and then we can use that to have conversations. So let's say you've decided, I've inspired you, you're like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I wanna have a conversation across political divides. Maybe you have someone in mind that you know in your life, or maybe you're interested in an opportunity to do that, but you can't think of anyone, and I'll give you a couple resources for that as well. So one would be to try and humanize that person first, resisting that us versus them, enemy, binary characterization, and really holding space for the ways that people have been let down, their fears, and their hopes. Similar to how you would want someone to hold space for you in hearing how you've been let down, your fears, and your hopes. Considering language, and once again, using common language as much as you can, using language that people are familiar with instead of your favorite words. This can feel heterodox, and that's okay. Again, coming from an evangelical background where it wasn't okay to say certain things, I think I have kind of a high radar for when I notice that around me in culture, when it becomes not okay or taboo to say certain things or have certain ideas in social circles. I'm like, ooh, a kind of a light bulb goes off. And I think the more that we can lean into and be comfortable with uncertainty and with not having all the answers, I think the more likely we are going to be able to be in a human-to-human space with someone we disagree with. Next one would be to ask open-ended questions and listen with resilience. I'll give you some examples of open-ended questions. And often they tend to really revolve around people's lived experiences and their core values, and what's at the heart of the matter for them. And starting with those things instead of jumping straight to, well, what do you think about this news story, really gives people an opportunity to think on a heart level, and again, getting real with what they've been through and the challenges that they've faced. Listening with resilience means staying in the conversation even when you're uncomfortable. I've been there. You're starting to sweat. You're like, this is terrible. This person is saying things I deeply disagree with, and I can barely sit here. And listening with resilience encourages us to hold space for that person, even if it deeply bothers us. And lastly, taking winning, persuading, and finding common ground off the table. We might not get to any of those things in this conversation. The goal would be to listen, to understand. So some example questions. One of them would be focusing on personal lived experiences. My examples have democracy, but you could kind of fill in the blank with anything that you would want to talk about with someone. And these, I think, I read this with my spouse, and he's like, this needs to be in context. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. So you can't necessarily just pop this question to someone in the grocery line, right? Ideally, this would be someone that you've had a relationship with, you've already caught up, you've done the small talk. Have you been? Oh, you've been going to the sauna lately. That sounds so fun. And then sitting down and being like, so I've been curious. I haven't really talked to you about this yet, but I'm just kind of curious to understand what experiences you've had that have shaped your views on democracy. And they'd be like, huh, okay. And be like, yeah, no, I generally just want to hear what you think, and I'm not here to call you out. And they'd be like, oh, okay. or they'd be like, I'm not going to talk to you about that. But that kind of indicates how afraid people are to talk about these things and how taboo it's become. But looking at that personal experience question opens up a well of opportunity, again, for them to not talk about, I saw this news story, I've been reading this on TikTok. It's more about your personal experiences. And that could be going to the voting booth. It could be a union meeting. It could be walking down the sidewalk and having a conversation. It could be talking with a candidate. It will get you into that personal experience space, which is much less divisive than the kind of cultural milieu around, I shouldn't have used that, it's a big word, the cultural mess around some of these words. So the next one would be, when thinking about democracy in America, what's at the heart of the matter for you? And I mentioned this earlier, that heart question gets people away from thinking about bottom lines or thinking about an exchange. The word's not coming to me. But it gets them more thinking in a heart space, in an empathy space. And they might be able to say, well, the heart of the matter for me is I'm worried about my kids. Or the heart of the matter is for me is I can't pay for my healthcare. Whatever it might be, you're asking them what's at the heart of the matter, and you'll get something different than, well, what do you think about X? And then the last one is leaning into mixed feelings and contradictions. I mentioned this a couple slides ago, but many people have mixed feelings. Many people have contradictions within themselves. And Rilke has a quote about living into the questions, right? So we're living into the things that we don't fully understand and the areas in which we're not even sure what we think. And so being able to ask people about that also opens up a lot of doors because, again, nobody is one thing. A voting checkbox only shows you a tiny thing about someone. And so asking them about areas where they're not sure opens up space. And then lastly, where do you see the strongest need for dialogue in Winona right now? So this one could be useful if you want to stay more in like the community term and just talk about where do you see a need for community in Winona and start there with someone too. So that's just a few example questions on things to think about as you want to enter into this. And then in conversations, it's important to affirm what you're hearing and let people know that you hear them and you understand them And then ask gentle follow-up questions if you don't understand something. So let's say I'm talking with someone who's using the word mandate over and over. Government mandates, I don't like mandates. All these mandates mean that I can't do anything. I want less mandates. So I could say, one word that I'm hearing a lot is mandate. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that means to you? And then that gives that person an opportunity to unpack and maybe get away from a talking point and more into a space, well, I'm just worried about X, Y, Z, or I just don't understand this when this comes down from above. And then asking people to just tell you more about how they came to a conclusion. This will give you an opportunity to understand their journey to that point, even if you don't agree with where they ended up. And this is one that, with my own family, I've been able to really have good conversations. And I'll be honest, not recently. I think I need to do this more. Really, since the pandemic, it's been harder and harder to have these conversations. But I can remember back in 2019, talking with my family members about, we all believe that people need help, and we have a responsibility to help each other. And for me, I think the government should do more to help people. And for one of my family members, they said, I actually think the church should do more to help people. But we agreed on the fact that people needed more support and that sometimes the bad things that happened to them were not their fault. And I think that was a really important thing to hear and to recognize that that doesn't mean that my family member doesn't care. They just have a different solution than I do. So asking people to tell you more sometimes gets you into those spaces, and you can be surprised by what you hear. And lastly, noticing your own responses. And this would not be something you would say out loud. but noticing when you're starting to feel tense and being curious about what's triggering you and whether you can, in that moment, refocus on that person's full humanity. So noticing that, maybe being able to take a deep breath, maybe touching your fingertips together, holding a fidget, something that reminds you that you're okay and that you're safe. And if you really can't continue the conversation, having something graceful to say, like, thank you for sharing that with me. I would love to revisit this later, but I've got to run. or just, you're thirsty or whatever. So I feel like I've been telling you a lot of things, and I would really love to give you an opportunity to practice this together. And this is a this is by choice, right? You're not asked to do this and forced to do this, but if you want to try practicing that in this space right now, what I would invite you to do, and again, you can opt out, go get a drink in the hall, it's okay, or rant, whatever, but would be to answer this practice question with someone sitting next to you. So what values do you hold that lead you to want to try talking constructively across the red-blue divide? What values do you hold personally in your heart that lead you to want to try talking constructively across the red-blue divide? I'll leave it up there so you can read it. Do we feel up for it? Do we want to try some turn and talk? You'll have about 5 minutes. So if you're in pairs, that's about 2 minutes per person, thinking about what core values you have that lead you to want to try talking across the divide. Okay, 5 minutes. All right, folks. I know 5 minutes goes by fast. If anything, it's a reminder to let conversations take the time they need to take, right? Which I did not model for you. Thank you for leaning into that question. I hope that it caused you to think a little bit about, your own personal values. It definitely was a thinker for me, too, about why do I bother? Why is this important to me personally? How does it relate to my core values? So I think we have time to hear from, two people on one thing that you're taking away from the conversation that you just had. Just a real brief, one sentence or two sentences on what stuck out to you from this little practice that we just did. Two brave volunteers. Right, so thank you for sharing that. There's comfortable spaces where you're with people that think the same as you, and but if you open yourself up to conversations with people who don't agree with you, then the whole world is open to you. Am I paraphrasing that right? Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, let's hear from one more person in the back. That's okay. It sounds like you went. Sounds like you went deep. So this group was exploring the overlap between values and beliefs and how those things intersect with each other. Am I hearing that right? Okay. Yeah. So I want to leave you with some resources around this. So if I've piqued your interest in talking across divides and learning more about this and maybe getting better at it, it's kind of like a muscle where, like, if you don't work it out, it can atrophy. But there's some really cool resources out there. So one is the Better Arguments Project. And that basically, their premise is that we don't need to have fewer arguments. We just need to have better arguments. We need to be able to talk with people we disagree with. And not have it turn into a shouting match. And so they give really cool frameworks for that, and I've leaned heavily on that framework in some of the things I've shared with you today. Essential Partners is a nonprofit in Massachusetts, and they have a 160-page handbook called Fostering Dialogue Across Divides, which I also leaned on for those sample practice questions. And then I mentioned PACE. They are the ones that did that Civic Language Perceptions project, and they have a guide called How to Talk Bridgy, which is a made-up word, but it's how to use language to bridge divides instead of drive people apart. There's an organization called Braver Angels, and it is a combination of conservative and liberal people that have come together to say, we're better than this, we can communicate with each other and do it well. And they have free e-courses that you can sit down and take about a 40-minute seminar. There's one for red and there's one for blue. And you can watch the one that you identify with and learn some tools for communicating across to the other side. Citizen University, they do a lot of work around community power and building power in individuals and helping people get involved in their communities, kind of like Engage Winona. And then Living Room Conversations will give you really easy, like, one-page handouts that you can use to have conversations in your living room. And then there are cool Minnesota organizations that also do this work. One of them is Project Optimist. They're a news organization. One of them is Majority in the Middle. And they work mostly up in St. Paul to get politicians on both sides to agree that they're more in the middle than they than our partisan environment would lead them to believe. Citizens League hosts statewide conversations about topics that are frequently misunderstood. And then a couple books. I can never not recommend some books. One is You're More Powerful Than You Think by Eric Liu. And then one is called The Highest Common Denominator by Mickey Cashton. And I can share this out with folks too. So I'm going to leave you with a poem. Thank you for listening. Sorry that I went over time. And this is a poem that I wrote. So again, I'm sharing with you a little bit more of my personal self than I usually do when I'm wearing my Engage Winona hat. If you like my poetry, I have a website called tornpaperpoems.com where you can read my work. But this one is, I wrote it in 2022, and it was really a poem that was mourning the separation that the pandemic caused and the ways that we were failing to understand each other even then. And I think it reads really impactfully right now. When I found it this week, I was like, oh, I need this poem right now. And I feel like I'm the audience for my poetry, so of course it makes sense to me, but I hope that it's something that I can leave you with that's a little bit of beauty. So what I want is to tell a story you recognize, mostly new and not belonging to you, but with just enough that is common to cause a ripple of familiarity. You know what it is to struggle, to care for a screaming child, to wander the aisles of a market, forgetting what you came to buy. You know what it is to experience an upset stomach, a sudden inability to speak without crying. You know what it is to laugh what sounds like sobs, to be broken, to wake up anyway, to give a small kindness to a child, a coworker, a stranger. Sometimes you have chosen that without choosing, and at other times you have turned away, as I have. It is a story of returning always to the cord we hold together, faces, bodies, breath, the sudden warmth of someone else's hand amidst the years of distance, impossible to drive apart, although, bless us, we tried. Thank you. Thanks, Steve. Language as a bridge.